Paris Great Sunday, December 6, 2015. Okay, we're going to talk a whole lot of football here on the Green and White Show. All right, you're going to be very, very challenging for the New York Jets to be able to continue to move closer to an AFC wild card spot. We're going to talk a little college football as well. We're going to be joined by the great Robin Vandenberg to have joined us on the program as well. We'll talk a lot of NBA. Kobe hanging up. Big news. We'll definitely talk that as well. A lot going on in the world. Acknowledging Pearl Harbor Day tomorrow. You'll see a lot of that around the NFL. You got a lot of NFL. And like I always say, a whole lot more.
Welcome to another edition of the Green and White Show. Joining us back from the break, Amiri Tuluk there, Joseph Haas here. Remember, you can always follow Amiri Tuluk on Twitter at Amiri Tuluk and myself, Joseph Haas, on Twitter at Jersey Haas, being joined by a very special guest to talk left turns. That's right, NASCAR on the Green and White Show. Robin Vandenberg joining us. Remember, you can follow her on Twitter at What Would TB 1-2 do? That's right. What would TB12 do? Which means we're going to get a little bit of football in this conversation. All right. But in the meantime, we're welcoming her to the show. What's up, Robin? What's going on?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys? And I'm sorry. No matter what happens to me, I will always keep that Twitter handle because you know the moment I let it go, it's gone. It'll be gone in like 5 seconds.
Very
so I
true,
can't
yeah.
change it.
Yeah.
I can't change it.
she's got a stranglehold on that one, and it's always been one of the most fabulous. We're going to talk a little bit of NASCAR, and then, of course, we're going to get a little bit of NASCAR, a little bit of NFL in with Robin as well. Kyle Busch wins the NASCAR Sprint Cup. Can you believe that? Wait, I don't know what the news is. Is it that Kyle Busch wins, or is it that Jeff Gordon finishes third and wins, and that's his last race? So, Robin, which makes more news amongst NASCAR fans, the fact that Busch actually won, or that Jeff Gordon, that this was his swan song?
Well, the thing is going into Homestead, there was actually four drivers that were eligible, okay, to win the championship, and all four of them had a great story. You know, you had, of course, you mentioned Jeff Gordon. You know, he's retiring, you know, and he had a miraculous win at Martinsville, which made him eligible to become a champion. Then you had Kevin Harvick, returning championship champion from last year. But not only that, Kevin Harvick has been the one that has been the most, I would say, successful throughout the whole year. He had the best average. Sometimes he was doing a 2.5 average finish. He was constantly either first or second. I think he dropped down to 8.5 for the rest of the season. And if we were going by points, he would have won. But he had a great story as well. The other story that I really loved as well was Martin Truex Jr., one car team. Mm-hmm. That is nobody has that except for Martin Truex Jr. He's the only person for Furniture Row Racing that only has one car on the team. His girlfriend has also been, you know, fighting cancer, you know, great story. You know, so all four of them, and of course with Kyle Busch, you know, he missed a lot of the first races. He got hurt in the Xfinity Series, broke both of his legs, came back. He missed 11 races. And there is a little bit of an asterisk with this, and I know people are going to be mad at me, but you are supposed to run all of the races, but Brian France, the president of NASCAR, gave him a waiver and allowed him to be eligible. Granted, when he did come back, he did win four races. So, you know, he was able to race his way in as far as races were concerned, but he did not race the whole season. So, okay, I do op-ed radio. I give my own opinion with my wonderful co-host, Shandy Warner. And, you know, we loved three of the four that were eligible. Just absolutely were ecstatic on that Sunday. Just could not wait. It was 2 weeks ago. Could not wait. We had to do a show on Monday, and, of course, Kyle Busch won. And we were so upset. And we tried very, very hard to be as professional as we could, and we did start off the show saying that Kyle Busch did win the championship. But for the rest of the show, we called him Kurt Busch's brother.
Wow. So you're trying to tell me three out of four you liked, and the one you didn't like was the one that won the race?
Oh, can you believe it? It was such a letdown. I'm like, don't bring me to Vegas. I mean, I had a
tearing up parlay cards.
I had a three out of four chance, man.
So let me let me ask you this then, from the expectation perspective, entering the race, what were the feelings like? What were Kurt Busch's odds or chances to win, if he had many at all?
Well, it was Kyle Busch.
Kyle Busch, sorry.
No, it's okay.
No, Kurt Busch's little brother. We'll just
Yeah, Kurt Busch's little brother. Actually, you know what's funny? Because then when they were showing all of them getting ready, I noticed Kyle was the only one that was, you know, he was sitting on the bottom of the racetrack putting on, you know, he had his uniform on, but he was putting on his race shoes. He was putting on, you know, the stuff, you know, they have to wear certain gear, mm-hmm. you know, and he was all by himself. Everybody was at Jeff Gordon's, you know, pit stall. Everybody was there. It was all about Jeff, you know. So he was, you know, I don't know if he was even had the chance to really think of championship at that moment. It was all about I'm retiring. They didn't show much of Martin Truex Jr. I think the person that most wanted to win was Kevin Harvick. And he did come in second. Literally he lost by 1 point. So it was... you know, if Kyle had not won that race, Kevin would have won it. Kevin would have won the championship. Mm-hmm. Jeff Gordon, unfortunately, you know, he was down by five. Martin Truex didn't have a good race either. But, you know, I think that Kyle Busch went in with, you know, one thing and one thing in mind. And if there's one thing Kyle Busch loves, is he loves his haters. He loves them, you know. He's like, you know, the Patriots. You know, they love their haters.
See how she did that? See how she snuck the football in there, Mary? See how she did that?
Sneak the Patriots in somehow.
Yeah, that was like the inside pitch there. You see how she did that?
But he was, you know, I got to give him props. I mean, he was, you know, he was in the zone. And he was in the zone from the very start. And it was one thing that I noticed throughout the whole coverage was he, you know, he did everything he possibly could to, you know, keep the distractions, keep the media, keep everybody away from him. And he did what he had to do and he won it. I got to give him props for that. However, he did not race all of the races that are required. So I have a little bit of a problem with that. You know, on to next year.
Mm-hmm. On to the next question. We're here, Robin Vandenberg joining us. Give us some great NASCAR talk here, Green and White Show. Mary Tillett there, Joseph Haas here. Got to ask you really quickly. Okay, now. So Kyle Busch wins. I want to ask you two quick questions, both concerning not just the present but the future of Sprint Cup and NASCAR. Who would you give me who's the right now of NASCAR, and who do you see coming up as the future of the Sprint Cup?
Well, right now we've got Chase Elliott, who's about to start with Hendrick Motorsports. Chase Elliott, of course, is the son of Bill Elliott, who was a former mm-hmm. Winston Cup champion. He did very, very well in the Xfinity Series. He's the golden boy. He ran for Junior Motorsports in the Xfinity, I believe, and also the Craftsman Truck Series. So Chase Elliott is going to be the one to watch. He could be the Rookie of the Year. The problem with that is the same thing happened last year with Carl Larson. Everyone thought Carl Larson was going to be the one to watch. And it's funny, I don't know if you've ever seen Carl Larson, but, you know, for any of you that are listening, you know, just Google him. He looks 12. So on my show, I always call him 12-year-old Kyle Larson. And
oh, wow.
I have nicknames. And he had a baby. So for last year he was baby dad, 12-year-old baby daddy Kyle Larson.
Wow.
But I know, I call it like it is. Casey Kane is now the baby daddy of NASCAR, so he recently had a baby. Which I find is funny because NASCAR is supposed to be the sport with all the morals. You know, they have that moral compass about them, you know, and all of this. And you've got all these drivers now that are having babies left and right, and they're not married. And I find it rather amusing. So I just kind of say that as a joke. So, you know, my demographic gets it.
Wow, he is 12.
Did you see? Does he not look 12? He looks 12.
He's literally 12.
Yeah, exactly. 12-year-old Carl Larson. I will never say he's 13, 14, or 15. He's always going to be 12-year-old Carl Larson. But I would say that the person to look for would be Chase Elliott. Mm-hmm. Never, ever, ever, ever count out Kevin Harvick, especially now that he's mad that he lost. The one sad note for next year is it's going to be Tony Stewart's last season.
Right.
He will be retiring. You know, next year. And unfortunately, because of events that happened the year before,
right,
he's never been the same. And anybody that knows Tony knows why. Tony has probably one of the biggest hearts in NASCAR. You know, people see him on the track and they think, oh my gosh, he's this aggressive hothead, blah, 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 blah. If you knew what he did off the track, you would have a totally different, you know, idea of what this man is truly like. He's probably one of the most loving and the most giving persons you'd ever meet. And his heart's just not in it anymore. And instead, he's going to do what he can to help Eldora. You know, and he's actually bought Eldora's, and he's going to run that series. He's also going to run, of course, Stewart Haas Racing as an mm-hmm. owner. You know, he's going to do what makes him happy. And I think it's going to be really bittersweet because I've seen him literally live win the championships that he did win. And, you know, watching Tony Stewart, because he's such a smart aleck, you know what I mean? He's so sarcastic, and that's what I love so much about him. And to see his career end the way that it has, it just breaks my heart. And it breaks anybody that loves Tony Stewart. Next year is going to be very, very, very hard for us. Jeff Gordon, it was very different. He ran his run, he won his championships, and you know he went out the way in which you know every driver would like to. Nobody wants to end their career the way Dale Earnhardt ended his career. And, mm-hmm. and the same with Tony Stewart. Nobody wants to end their career because mentally they're just not there anymore.
Now, I wanted to ask this question related to Jeff Gordon because this is perhaps something that maybe isn't thought about every single day when it comes to these retiring legends. But what do you think NASCAR, the sport, will miss the most from losing somebody like Jeff Gordon? Will it be you know, some of the off, you know, outside of the race intangibles, perhaps, or maybe is it his competitiveness? What are some of the aspects of Jeff Gordon, the racer, the person that NASCAR will miss coming at the end of this season?
Jeff Gordon started right when NASCAR was when Dale Earnhardt was ending his tenure. You know what I mean? As the big guy. You know, as the one to beat. Jeff Gordon came in as the kid. And still back then, NASCAR was considered, you know, have at it. That meant you can have at it on the track and you can have at it on the field, you know, off the track, and there were going to be no penalties. You know, so you still had that really aggressive type of driving. You had drivers in the car that had talent. They weren't drivers in the car that walked up to a team and said, hey, I have $50,000 from GM. Can I drive your car? And they'll say, well, sure, come on in, you know. And unfortunately, that is what's happened with NASCAR. You don't have to be a great driver. You just have to have the money. And the fans know that. And you can see it in the stands week after week. And with Jeff Gordon leaving, a lot of that is going to leave with him as well because he is part of the old school. You know what I mean? It's sad to think that 20 years ago was old school. But, you know, I see races, you know, every Sunday, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Oh, my gosh, you know? And then when people get mad because somebody took somebody out or spun somebody out, and Twitter goes crazy and Facebook goes crazy and, you know, the calls come in and they're calling my show and they're calling these people horrible drivers, and I'm like, oh, please, go on YouTube. See what NASCAR used to be, like when it was fun. You know, I have no problem with a driver taking out another driver in order to win a race. And I think that's what we're going to miss with Jeff. I really do. I think it's going to be a lot more corporate, and that's a shame.
One more before we let Robin go. Robin joining us on the program. Green and White Show. Mary Tillich there. Joseph Haas here. Robin Vandenberg joining us on the show. Remember, you can follow her on Twitter at What Would TB12 Do? We're going to let her talk about SquareUp.com and more before we let her go. But I've got to ask you, with some of what you said now, I'm wondering, is the sport still growing in popularity? Is it going to ever be as close to mainstream as some of the mainstream sports are? Are they ever going to command the TV dollars that some of those mainstream sports do? What do you think?
No, I see it slowly dying, unfortunately. In fact, today, Robin Pemberton, who is the vice president of operations, resigned. A lot of the stations went from being on ABC, CBS, and NBC to mm-hmm. now being on NBC Sports, or I think they ended their tenure with Fox as well. Sponsors are pulling out. We had a sponsor, 3M, pulled out yesterday.
What is it?
What's going on? What's making the people? I mean, this used to be where. I mean, for as long as I've known it, it was Winston Cup, and now it's Sprint Cup. What's making sponsors pull away from a sport that, you know, there's still a lot of people who love this sport, okay? So what's making the big names pull away from a sport that people still love?
The rules. Brian France. Brian France changes the rules on a daily basis. You, like I said before, what you used to see every Sunday on Wild Wilder Sports, I don't know if anybody remembers that, but
the
you
agony
would see
of
it then. Right. I mean, what you used to see then, you're not seeing now. You know, you're not seeing the rivalries. They try to make up rivalries, but it's all BS. It's complete BS. You know, they try to it's looking more like WWE than it is a NASCAR race. And that's the problem. The fans are smarter than Brian France. We're smarter than the sport. We know what they're trying to do, and they're ruining it. And unfortunately, the sponsors are seeing, you know, the attendance in the stands. They're seeing the ticket sales that are so down. They're seeing, you know, unfortunately, you're seeing commercials and all of that. The cost of running a commercial has gone down considerably. It's just they're not making the money, and it's such a shame. It really, really is, because their diversity program was starting to thrive. And I was so excited for that, especially in some of the lower divisions. There are some guys that I could not wait to see them in cars, you know, and I don't know if it's going to happen. And it's a sad, it's very, very sad. It's a dying sport.
Awesome to be able to take left turns with Robin Vandenberg joining us here on the program, Green and White Show. Before we let you go, please tell us a whole lot about SquareUp.com.
Okay, well, I do have another life. I actually am a skincare specialist, and I used to work for a dermatologist for 10 years, and I also taught. And so I actually launched my skincare line, Bella Mist Organics, this week. So I was really, really excited to do that. And it's a baby. It's my little baby right now, and I'm hoping she'll grow up and be huge. So
learn tongues. Skincare is a very valuable thing here.
Right.
Everybody loves anti-aging. Who doesn't want to age, right? I'm 72. Look at my Abby.
I still look 17.
There you go. Thank you so much for having me.
I still get carded at all the high schools.
Oh. Rub it in.
Yes, the horrible truth comes out.
Well, you can also listen to me on Hump Day. I do Hump Day Extreme. We used to be on Wednesday nights, but we're so hot that we had to carry it over to Thursdays. And that's on Inscribe Mag Radio. And Bump and Run will be back in 2 weeks on Inscribe Mag Radio as well.
Always a pleasure to be joined by Robin Vandenberg. Please check her out in all her ventures as well on Twitter 24/7. Please hit her up because she does answer back, trust me, at What Would TB12 Do? And check her out on SquareUp.com. Robin, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, guys.
Just realized the mute was on the microphone at the time. Green and White, so Joseph Haas here after the interview with Robin. Great time with her. Excuse me for the technical difficulty. We'll be having Reverend Ralph Mancini on the program pretty shortly. In terms of football, you'll be seeing a great matchup with the Jets and the Giants. You know that they're needing a big victory there. It's bragging rights. It's for it's really not just for the city. It's going to be more of a championship of the Empire State. Well, the Jets and the Giants are going to match up. So 6-5 New York Jets and 5-6 New York Giants going to take the field here, MetLife Stadium. In terms of injuries, it's going to be sad not seeing guys like Victor Cruz on the Giants, which, you know, his injury situation, you're just not sure, you know, what's going on with him. And you know, I'd love to see him get back some of his glory, because just, I mean, you almost forget that before Odell Beckham Jr. there was Victor Cruz. And then, of course, not being able to see Darrelle Revis, that's going to be, you know, a sad opportunity there, not being able to see Darrelle Revis play. So no Darrelle Revis versus Odell Beckham Jr. matchup. And that's one that I'm going to be going to be sad that I'm not going to be able to see. But we'll talk about that and a lot more here. Joining us on the program, the great Reverend Ralph Mancini. You can always catch him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph Mancini on Twitter. Ray, Reverend Ralph, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, Jets Giants, baby. How's it going?
Hey, not too bad. Guess what? So I had an interview. I played an interview and then didn't realize I had to mute and continue to do the show for about, I think it was 10 minutes without realizing the mute. You know that happens sometimes, right? I didn't realize it. Yeah. So every once in a while that happens, but picking up the pieces, let's see if I'm a good editor and see if I'll get that back. Let's get into some football right now. Reverend Ralph Mancini joins here on the program. I know you hear him and you can hear me. Ralph, great last three games of football before we get to the East. Sunday night, Monday night, and Thursday night. The pass. Ravens, can you believe that? You block the field goal, bring it back, and then the Packers, Hail Mary. Are we going to see anything anywhere near that this Sunday?
You know,
and what are your
really,
thoughts on those games?
It's setting itself up that way where, you know, you have these two games like this. You have to think something else crazy and outlandish is going to happen this Sunday with all these other games that are about to take place.
That's another tussle. But you look at a team like the Lions who you just thought, okay, maybe they can turn a little something around. The Packers team kind of licking their wounds. Can they go ahead and just step on the throttle a bit? And they go ahead and, you know, maybe from what you've seen, and we've all seen the replays of their defensive formation, what do you think the Lions were thinking then? How do you not, okay, if you don't put Calvin Johnson out there, put a wide receiver, fourth wide receiver, someone who's a kick returner, someone who's just a high pointing the ball. But what was your thoughts when you saw that? And in the end, you got to see the replay and actually see what the Lions were doing on defense.
Well, first of all, I don't think they had enough players in the end zone. I mean, if you were looking, I think the Packers outnumbered the Lions standing in the end zone. That's the first thing that I had a problem with. And then they had two players standing in the middle of the field doing nothing. I mean, what were they protecting against? You know, Aaron Rodgers maybe running it, you know, 60 yards for the touchdown? I mean, come on now. I mean, and then, as you mentioned, they didn't have Calvin Johnson in there. They also didn't have Ziggy Ansah in there for that last play. So, I mean, you know, you have two difference makers out there. You have to put them out there. The way they handled it, you know, in the end, it just it was a total choke job. And I also, you know, didn't like, you know, some of their play calling that they had on their last drive, you know, before they gave the ball back to the Packers, you know, going with a lot of conservative runs, you know, up the middle, you know, where they either had maybe like a 1 yard gain or a 2 yard loss, you know, running it up the middle with Joique Bell. I mean, hey, listen, you know, you just can't run the clock out when you have Aaron Rodgers standing on the other side of the field. You know, you got to go for some first downs on that last drive. You can't just, you know, play conservative and just try to run out the clock. So I thought their whole approach was misguided, I would say. And, you know, and then we all saw what happened at the end of the game.
Yeah, after they make some major move in their front office, talking about the Detroit Lions here, Green and White Show, Joseph Haas here, Reverend Ralph there. Follow us both on Twitter at Jersey Haas here and at Reverend Ralph for the Reverend. Just the wholesale changes in the front office. After seeing that game and knowing that that was not just that execution, that was coaching philosophy, that was just a major foul up, basically, the last 5-6 minutes of the game there. I don't want to say, you know, well, I don't like saying, you know, should be, you know, let go or whatever, but, you know, if he's the guy to get him through it, then more to the Lions, but just can't keep, you know, the Lions played, they deserve to win the football game, you know? They deserve to, and it's not their fault. And the players can feel dejected about that. That just wasn't their fault. Let's go into some teams that actually are looking to be successful. Let's talk a little Jets Giants, Rev. Jets 6-5 going into 5-6 matchup with the Giants. Metropolitan battle. AFC East definitely going to be impacted. You know, the Jets need the win. They want to keep going up. Bills are going to have their hands full with the Texans this week. So, quick thoughts on Jets.
Quick thoughts on Jets Giants. Well, on paper, you take a look at the Jets, and they're just a better team than the Giants. I mean, you look at multiple positions, you know, either on offense or defense, you know, running backs, receivers, offensive line. I just think the Jets have a better team than the Giants on paper. You know, I would say, you know, maybe the only one of the few positions where the Giants actually have an advantage is probably at quarterback. But again, you know, you put these two teams out in the field, you compare them, and the Jets have a better team, much better defense, that's for sure. So I think if the Jets come out with a good game plan, I think they should win today. They should win today. But again, you know, you're talking about the Giants, talking about a rivalry, you're talking about a desperate team in desperate need of a win that still amazingly has a chance to win its division. I'm talking about the Giants, of course. So, again, anything can happen there. I think the one thing that the Jets should be careful about is, obviously, you look, Odell Beckham Jr., he's going to get his numbers, but I would be more careful about shutting down the players around him. You know, it's been proven in the past that, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. could put up big numbers. He could put up 100 yards, but a lot of those games where he's had 100 yards, the Giants have actually lost. So I think it's more important to shut down the players around him, guys like Reuben Randle, guys like Dwayne Harris. And in particular, one player that I'd be careful with is Shane Vereen as well. Now, Shane Vereen hasn't had a great season, but we all know that he has the potential to be, you know, that running back out of the backfield that, you know, can just nickel and dime you down the field and catch, you know, 11, 12 balls on any given Sunday. So the Giants are probably looking to exploit their linebackers in coverage, guys like, you know, DeMario Davis and David Harris. So that's one thing I would be careful about, especially Shane Vereen today. But overall, as I mentioned before, now if Brian Fitzpatrick does not turn over the ball, and it's been proven that, you know, when he's had either 0 to 1 interceptions, the Jets have only lost one game this season. So if he could keep his turnovers in check, I think the Jets have the horses to win this game. I think overall they're the better team.
Look offensively, you know, Houghton's quarterback comparison aside, I look at you know, the Jets receiving core and can easily see how, you know, I just really wish the Jets attacked the tight end position a little better. How can you expect both your tight ends to go down to injury? But I just thought when free agency went around and you see a guy like Vernon Davis without that, you know, just imagine what they could have done with a player like that. So I think about that, and that's pretty much my only problem with it. McCagnan's done. I really think he's done a pretty good job. On the outside looking, what do you think in terms of the Jets GM? What grade do you think is great?
I'm sorry, what was the question again?
What's your grade for the Jets GM done so far in terms of first year?
I think he's done a good job. I think he's done a good job. You know, the way he's put together the secondary, especially. I like the way, you know, he's brought in a guy like Brandon Marshall, who, you know, is just a proven veteran, and the guy has just been so consistent. That's the thing I like about, you know, guys like, you know, veterans like Brandon Marshall. These guys just been so consistent week in and week out. I do like the job that McCagnan has done. He did have, you know, money to play with, so. But you know what? I mean, just because you have money to spend in free agency, that doesn't mean that, you know, you should do a good job of putting a team together. So I like the job that he's done so far. So, if I had to give him a grade so far at this point, I would say I would give him probably a solid B+.
That would be a great grade for him, and I agree there. B+. There's a team on the football field that's competitive, so we got to see how he comes out of this and attacks the quarterback position, the backup tight end position or tight end position, how he rebuilds the offensive line, which is aging, before our very eyes. There are some questions he's going to have hands full during another off season, as you always do when you manage a team in a city like New York. And all around the NFL this weekend, Ralph, they're going to be acknowledging Pearl Harbor Day and Pearl Harbor weekends. They'll be seeing a lot of that going on across the NFL. So great, it's great for them to acknowledge. It's always great to see the patriotism that the NFL shows. It's always a wonderful time there. But back to a couple of things. Okay, so quick question I want to ask you. Dolphins, they play the Ravens. Bills, they play the Texans. Out of the Dolphins and the Bills, Ralph, which team do you think is more likely to lose a football game? Bills, Texans, Dolphins, Ravens?
Well, if I had to compare both teams, I'm not excited about either one of those teams, either the Dolphins or the Bills. I would say that the Buffalo Bills have probably a better chance of making noise down the stretch. The Dolphins are just a lost team right now. And, look, I've defended Ryan Tannehill for the past year or so, and I really thought that he was going to take that next step this year. But I have to say I've been very disappointed in him from a number of aspects. He hasn't improved as a quarterback. His numbers across the board, sometimes a lot of times he'll put up like empty stats. He's improved somewhat as a deep passer, but he still can't read defenses. And under pressure, he's just not a very good quarterback. He does not make good decisions, makes some of the worst mistakes out there. And I can't give him that excuse again that, oh, he's a young quarterback. No, you can't coddle quarterbacks like that. We've seen that in New York with Mark Sanchez, just a few years ago. You cannot coddle these guys, after they've been, your starting quarterback for 2, 3, 4 years. So I think these last few weeks, these are going to be huge for Ryan Tannehill. He's going to have to prove himself because, let me tell you, with, Tannenbaum making the personnel decisions in Miami, I think he's going to start looking for somebody to take over for Tannehill, whether that's in free agency, whether that's in the draft. I don't want to come up with any guesses right now. It's too early to say, some of the guys they might be interested in. But, yeah, these last few weeks are going to be huge for Ryan Tannehill. And as far as the rest of the Miami Dolphins go, I don't know. I mean, they look good at receiver. They look good at running back. But the defense has been disappointing. They're bringing a guy like Namakansu, and they still have trouble stopping the run. So they need to make a lot of changes on defense. And, again, the big one there is Ryan Tannehill. He's going to have to show something in these next few weeks.
I'm going to quote a great man. A great man says, good teams find a way to win. Bad teams find new ways to lose.
Yes,
let's switch
absolutely.
To good team. The team is the bad team. Any of these matchups going down today. I wonder who that person was I quoted. We'll see. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Reverend Ralph. Hey, always a pleasure joining me, my man. I really appreciate you when you're here on the show. Great rest report. Enjoy the Sunday full of football. Whew, it's going to be another one. Catch you next week.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
The Reverend Ralph Mancini joining us on the program. You get good tidbits like that and a lot more when you follow him on Twitter. He's always good in-game as well. He'll give you the analysis like sport. Pulls no punches. I love having him on the program. Back to those last three exciting games of the weekend. These are the last ones my mom got to see before she went away to Africa, sending her home back home, as she calls it, after 2 years. So love you, Mom. You're listening. So You know, she got to see some great games, and I said, yeah, I mean, you're not going to be able to see these. You're going to have to watch them on tape delay or watch them on. I'm wondering actually how she's going to be able to watch them. But we got to watch these against Broncos, stun the Patriots overtime. Unbelievable contest there. Then you've got the Ravens and the Browns. How do you do that? I love the ability for the leadership, actually, of Johnny Manziel at the end of the game, like putting his arm around Austin Davis and saying, hey, look, kid, you know, that's what it looked like. It looked like he was saying, hey, look, kid, you did nothing wrong. You got your team in position for the field goal. And then it gets blocked, and the run by Will Hill on the kick. Great call there. So Browns get stunned, and then stunner of all stunners. We talked about with Reverend Ralph, Chris Lyons, just unbelievable how they let Aaron Rodgers get that throw off and get it into the end zone, and great catch by Rodgers, who, you know, be part of history now, and power his dad part of history in college football lore. We a lot of great past week. If this week can live up to it. I mean, there are some good matchups. You're going to see the Browns action against the Bengals, like I mentioned. You're going to see a great NFC West matchup. Love when they like I mentioned, you don't have to worry about the records. You know, there's always some you know, just some fire in those matchups. So Cardinals, who are looking at, you know, pace with the undefeated Carolina Panthers, they're going to be facing the NFC West division rivals, St. Louis Rams. So that'll be there. Of course, you got the Chiefs and Raiders as well. That's always interesting and fun. And later in the weekend, going into the evening matchup, you got the Colts Steelers, and then Monday Football, Cowboys Redskins, which could have a bit more juice. But the Redskins, you know, now make a move in the NFC East. That's going to give that game a lot more fire, a lot more to look forward to. But, you know, I would have loved a little bit better of a matchup on Monday night. You know what? I would have liked one of these Saturday night football games on Monday night. We're all going to know. I mean, we basically know anyway. But we're all going to know at noon today where the committee has ranked these great college football teams. The college football will be. And I don't know about you, but Henry, he's like the de facto Heisman guy. You know? I mean, like what I saw from Chris McCaffrey. Man, Ed McCaffrey's kid out there balling for Stanford. Love watching him play football. They win. They beat USC. So Trojan fans licking their wounds after Stanford really ran them down. So a great win for that program. Love watching seed. I think they're trying to show Notre Dame, hey, look, this is what you can do when you're in a conference. You're still in the conversation. I mean, Notre Dame isn't in the conversation right now. Michigan State toppling undefeated Iowa. That was a great game last night to watch, too. I mean, you got to see some really good defenses hammer at it. The offense, it wasn't that there were stagnant offenses because the running games were for both teams, the offensive line well. And for the most part, the passing game was adequate. It was accurate. Basically just a slugfest on defense. You saw players get in position to make plays. And by watching that game, by the end, I said, you know what, whichever team gets out of this is going to be a very poor representation of Big Ten. And I think either of those teams would have done well in representing the Big Ten and Michigan State, fighting their way through, beating another undefeated team. I mean, they had to topple Ohio State and then topple Iowa. Just to get into this, just to get to play two more games to get into the championship. So great job by Michigan State, and all this love by Michigan fan. All right, and then of course we've got the winner round. We've got some going here. Even guys at record to move coach. You know, there've been rumors that have been confirmed. So we'll talk about that when actually we actually named the head coach at Rutgers, but Rutgers. And a lot of other programs, and some very, very big programs making moves. Georgia making a move, Miami making a move, LSU not making a move, which became news. Kind of a late last minute decision for them not to get rid of Les Miles. Which I think if they got rid of Les Miles, LSU that would have been a bad move. I kind of, you know, not just thought I liked the guy. He seems to do well there. You know, he seems to fit there. They seem to fit him. You know, he's not. You know, he's missing talent. You know, it's not that LSU's lack talent. What happened? happened at the end of the season, I can't tell you. I mean, they were right there with the Heisman Trophy candidate and a top seed and a shot, SEC championship shot at the playoff, and it just all came falling down. FSU looking for answers. They won't be looking for answers at the head coach position. Les Miles remains with LSU. Seeing a move, but not really firing Sarkisian in there. They're keeping the interim coach there. So not making a move, but making a move for USC. So a lot of coaches making moves in college football. Lots of things going on in our area here in New York, in the metropolitan area. Green and White, Joseph Frost, show you follow me under at Jersey Haas. We'll be joined at the top of the hour by Bigger Batter Ben Wayne. At Brian will join us on the gram. Make sure you get them on Twitter at Brian Benway. That Y, not with an I, folks. Now, like I said, huge matchups this week in the metropolitan area. I mean, we had Rangers and Islanders, okay? We had Brooklyn face off against Knicks, which was a very entertaining game. Love watching that KP play. That Porzingis. Great pick by Phil Jackson, you know? He's got some rings, and now he's made a great GM move. He should pretty much drop the mic this year and retire. But then, of course, we've got Jets, right? We're focusing on here on the program. So a great, great week of sports in the area. Something that went on in the NBA, now that I just happened to touch on that. Kobe Bryant, you got to think about it now. Kobe's been playing a long time. Kobe Bryant announcing his retirement. Like, you've been watching his performances recently, and you could tell it was, close to the end for him. And sure enough, now that he's announced his retirement, that kind of makes it official, kind of makes that official. And it's kind of, you sit back and you go, wow, all the years of great Kobe scoring and championships with Shaq. Great Kobe scoring. you see a guy like Kobe about ready to hang it up. So, well, being the last of Mr. Bryant, gave us a great career. One of the best NBA players. Some would say he's their favorite. He's their best. Of course, there's going to be, I don't know, there's probably people who would, never say that Michael Jordan was better than the best they ever saw of Dr. J or Abdul Jabbar. So, but my favorite I ever saw was Michael Jordan. The best I ever saw was Michael Jordan, and the closest thing I see to toppling that is LeBron James, to be honest. So, Kobe, always in the mix for top players, in my opinion, but he always falls short of great Michael Jordan. Number 23. Need I say more? But Kobe Bryant hanging it up. Us not hanging it up. Us powering through. Green and White Show here. Now, I want to get into a little bit, and I should give a tertiary mention to the MLS. Why not? Because we are a sports show. We should cover all sports. The Red Bulls not winning. Columbus taking them out. So Columbus will play against Portland in the MLS Cup. That's Sunday, 4 p.m. Standard time. I feel like I just did a public service announcement or something like that. But back to the Jets Giants matchup is, kind of the focus of the show, because I don't just want this to be like one of those, Jets fans raw, Giants fans raw, keep propelling forward in their goal of making the postseason. So, first talking about them trying to be a 5 seed, they've got to really nip on the ankles of the 6 seed here in the AFC playoff race. There are a lot of teams fighting on this record with the 5-6s and the 6-5s, and now that you've got an opportunity here to beat a Giants team that can be competitive, but on paper doesn't match up. Offense versus defense, it just doesn't match up. What the Jets should be able to do is put a stranglehold on this Giants team. And don't forget, this Giants team is resilient. You saw that last week. They weren't going to say die down 20-0. They still, miraculously threw it around and got themselves close enough to make it a game. So the Jets can't think that, putting up a couple of touchdowns is going to silence a team, especially in this kind of game here in this stadium. No, that's not going to happen. So like I said, it's going to pull up, but it's going to be a close one, very close one. On clock at MetLife, I believe it's a Giants home game, but you're going to see a whole lot of green. Hope everybody represents. It's going to be an awesome time. It's going to be a good party in New York, and the Jets looking to come away with another victory. It's time to string a couple together, you know. After a good start, getting off to that 4-1 start, it's time for them to string a couple of wins together. And it would be, you know, no better way of doing that than taking down the Giants and you know, kind of muck their chances at getting back on top of the NFC East. Like, yeah, I couldn't believe it. They were leading the NFC East. It just didn't seem like, the, you know, they were the type of team that were going to hold off that for that long. So, and then we get into bigger, bad Benway. Remember, you can always find me on hostileopportunities.com. But yeah, one more time, that's HAASSTYLEinterpretations.com. All right, my inbox always yours. Hit me up, Joseph Haas NFL at email.com. 24/7 online. Hit me up on Twitter at Jersey Haas. And remember, working capital. What business doesn't need more money? Small to mid-sized businesses, find that. CastCapitalFunding.com. Need it? Go ahead, hit me up, Joseph at CastCapitalFunding.com. Now back to the Green and White Show. It's the top of the hour, and you know what that means here on the program. It's Bigger, Badder. Ben will be joined here on the program by the one and only Brian Benway. Follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. That is a Y, not with an I. My friend, how are you doing today?
Man, you build me up, and I feel like I'm going to disappoint because you give me this great introduction, and then I feel like I'm just blabbering like an idiot for 30 minutes. So next time I would appreciate just don't talk as nice about me if you don't mind.
Okay, folks, Brian Benway, he's just a sidekick sports. How are you? Hey, how's it sound? I'm sounding pretty good.
Yeah, I actually had a lot of work yesterday. I didn't get in until 3 o'clock in the morning after working some state championship games yesterday. So I might sound a little bit more irrational than usual, which means that, holy cow, who knows what we're going to talk about, what I'm going to say today. So.
Oh, goodness. Oh, man. We've got Brian Benway unleashed here on the program, folks. Half an hour on for you. Hope everyone's enjoying the program. That's going to be action packed next half hour. So let's get into rehashing the week that was our national back Sunday, Thursday. I just think what the game did. Broncos and the Patriots. Patriots no longer undefeated. And one OT. I'm thinking, here we go. It's another Patriots story. This is just going to be one of those games they talk about when they do the NFL Network Tom Brady story. This game's going to hot. He's driving them down the field. Score a touchdown on this. Who is it? Quarterback that we can't pronounce his name. And sure enough, the Broncos win. Okay. And then we get Monday night. The Ravens. Okay. Browns playing pretty damn good. What? Kidney gets blocked. Runs it back. Ravens win. We get. Because why just straight against? Why have three? So then the pick throw a Hail Mary. What lines the defense?
Yeah, I'll start with the Patriots and Broncos. And it was funny because I was talking with my mom, who we talked about on this show, is a huge Patriots fan. She was actually, again, texting me wildly crazy during the game. But before the Patriots-Broncos game, I told her, listen, if you really want to have a Patriots long playoff run, if you want to feel really comfortable, I would prefer the Patriots lose in the regular season and not go unbeaten all the way to the Super Bowl like they did against the Giants in 07. So I was okay with the Patriots losing to the Broncos. My mom, on the other hand, was very distraught over the loss. And actually, she brought it up again yesterday when I was talking to her. But looking at the Broncos game, they've got that quarterback now. They have a new guy under center, Brock Osweiler, who is 2-0. He's playing well. Anytime you beat a team like the Patriots, that's a feather in your cap. I like what he's done in Denver, and it'll be very interesting to see if this truly is his team now. And then you had the Browns being the Browns. I don't know of any other team in any other sport, in any other city, that has had the worst luck and has had the worst losses and has just been as terrible as the Cleveland Browns. The Browns out-browned themselves in that game. I hadn't seen that. I don't even remember when I saw that. That was an insane way to lose a football game. You think, oh, okay, the Browns might actually pull this one out today. But then they out-browned themselves. It's ridiculous. And then you've got the Packers, the Lions. That was a great finish, too. I'll tell you what, I can't remember a time where we had those games that all ended the same way within a week or two. It was great to watch, great entertainment. If this week we can just get half of what that was last week, I think all of us football fans would be pretty happy.
Yeah, that would work. Okay, so to get exact half, we get one game that comes down to the wire, ends exactly one of those other three games ends, and then we get like a Hail Mary that's completed to end like the second quarter to go into halftime. That would be like one and a half, right?
that would still take that, though.
I would take that, too. That sounds like it. We'll ask for that. We'll ask for that and a lot more. Brian Benway always joins us this time of here on the Green White Show. Joseph Haas here. Follow me on Twitter at Jersey Haas. Remember, follow him on Twitter at Brian. Okay, so much more to talk about. So many more games to talk about. Some college football to talk about. Okay, so now it's pretty much settled. We all know who's getting in. We know Alabama's going to be in there. Stanford not making it in, even though they won the Pac-12. They're on the outside looking in. Clemson survives North Carolina. No, and Michigan beat Iowa. It was really good to watch. Stanford smacked around USC. That was actually pretty embarrassing there. Alabama running pretty good. But in terms of the top four teams that are going to be in, it looks like all that's left is to where they seed them, so how they fall or whatever, and all the politics of that. So Alabama, Oklahoma, Michigan State are definitely in, and Clemson. So what are your thoughts on Final Four? Do you feel that somebody should be in that isn't, or is there somebody in that definitely shouldn't be in?
First of all, before we go any further, whenever you say Alabama, you need to say it like Keith Jackson. You remember Keith Jackson, the old ABC
Alabama.
Broadcaster? Alabama, playing in the granddaddy of them all. You've got to say Alabama like Keith Jackson. He was the best. It's Alabama. So that's how we have to say Alabama when we talk about that. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, I think it's a very interesting top four. And you're right. I don't foresee any surprises. It's going to be Clemson. It's going to be Alabama. It's going to be Oklahoma. And it's going to be Michigan State. And by the way, that was a heck of a Michigan State win over Iowa. So when I look at the top four, you have the two SEC, or you have Alabama, then you have Clemson, who are at the top two. And then you have Oklahoma and Michigan State. Looking at the top two teams, I think it's safe to say those are the stronger two teams. But I'd watch out for Michigan State. I would watch out for Michigan State because I love what their defense does. They have a smack-you-in-the-nose type of defense. And they have an offense that can take up some clock. They have running backs that are going to smack you in the face. I just like the hard-nosed type of football that Michigan State plays. They're from the Big Ten, who we obviously know had Ohio State, national champion. But I'm going to say I would watch out for Michigan State. I honestly do. Now, if they go and seed them 1-4, Michigan State is going to take on Clemson, I would imagine. That would be a great matchup. But I'm telling you, I would watch out for Michigan State to do some damage in this four-team playoff.
Okay, no, since my guy is from Rutgers, since Rutgers is a Big Ten school, I should be cheering for the Big Ten because who wouldn't want all those dollars to go back to the school? So, you know, I'm waving my palms for Michigan State, and my love for Michigan has me feeling some kind of way about that, actually reminding me, when you talk about how games can end, you actually reminded me my friend, of how the Michigan State game ended, and how, yeah, that does happen every once in a while, but it seems to happen a couple of times this season, and both of them really painful for the team. So, no, definitely your point on the college playoff as well. I would think that possibly adding another couple of teams would help this process. I don't know how they would then schedule up the games. Do they then make one of the games not on New Year's? It would obviously be the week before. In it would be kind of, I guess, goal of all those bowl games during that weekend. Do you think they could get away with adding a couple of more teams to this college football playoff to get teams who we'd love to see in this, like a Stanford and Iowa, who only lost one game to Michigan State, would like to see, you know, I mean, maybe squeeze in room for an Ohio State. You know, would you be amenable to them maybe expanding by two more teams?
I would want to go up to eight, actually. I would love to see an eight-team playoff. And here's what I would do. There are so many crappy bowl games. I mean, you're going to have a lot of teams that are under 500 with five wins playing in crappy bowl games like GoDaddy.com Bowl. All these, I think 41 bowl games or something like that. That's way too many. I'm interested in probably two or three. And it's funny, when I was working for Yahoo Sports, we had a lot of the college bowl games on our airwaves. And I kept saying, there's not a lot of games I'm excited about. And it's still, to this day, way too many bowl games. Who wants to watch the TaxSlayer.com Bowl, for crying out loud, with two teams, maybe one of them has five wins, one of them has seven wins? Here's what I would do. I would put eight teams in the college football playoff. Now, if Division III and Division II and Division I AA can have a playoff, then why can't Division I? I want to see eight teams go. You would have one against eight, two against seven, three against six, four against five. That would be the first round, and you would basically go that route. I would love to see eight teams. You would have to start it probably the week after this. You could go into the championship game January 7th or 8th. That's what they do now, but you wouldn't have a gap in between. You know, when you have the gap probably three weeks before. Yeah, you wouldn't have the gap. So you probably would have 1 week this upcoming week where you wouldn't have any games. That would be okay. Then you would have the eight teams play in the playoffs. I think that would be great. I think four is too little. Six, then you would have to kind of do who gets a bye. And then if you did eight, I think that works out perfect.
Mm-hmm. And then, but you know, you would run into some problems probably with bowls themselves, because with four, a couple of the bowls get to remain traditional at least a couple of times in the rotation. For instance, you know, if the Rose Bowl isn't in the championship conversation, or one of the, you know, games in which the semifinal needs to make it to, then the Rose Bowl can have its traditional, you know, Pac-12 Big Ten matchup, right? But if it's in the championship rotation, and when you increase the number of games, that would put a team, that would a bowl like the Rose Bowl, which is as prestigious as it is, they would not have themselves left out of hosting one of these games. Therefore, they would probably end up sacrificing their traditional Rose Bowl for as long as they're in that playoff rotation. Do you see where I'm coming from with that? So
I do, but the Rose Bowl is still the Rose Bowl, and the Rose Bowl is still very prestigious. I don't think, to me, as a fan, it wouldn't matter if it was a playoff matchup or the traditional Rose Bowl. I still love when they start the Rose Bowl and you have the aerial view of the stadium in Pasadena. What I am completely okay with is doing that, because then again, it takes away some of those games that nobody cares about. So I get where you're coming from. I do. And I think I could see where the Rose Bowl folks, the folks that put that game together, might be thinking about. But at the end of the day, you have to think about it. The Cotton Bowl is still a prestigious bowl no matter what they get. The Rose Bowl is still a prestigious bowl. All those games are still going to be marquee games, no matter if it's a traditional matchup or a playoff matchup. I think overall it'll help the system if we can add those teams to the playoff mix. But I get where you're coming from.
And I kind of agree with you. I was just kind of playing kind of devil's advocate as well, because, you know, there's going to be, you know, that contingent. But I agree with you with adding more, of course, is better. I mean, look at the conversation now. I mean, what have we been talking about for the last 2 or 3 weeks? We've been basically talking about play-in games, to me, are playoff games. I know we've been talking about that for the last couple of weeks. Team win this game, they don't win this game, they're out. This team needs to win this game. They win, they're in. You know, Stanford got their win, but because others didn't lose in front of them, they're on the outside looking in, probably going to end up fifth when all things said and done, possibly sixth with Iowa maybe only moving down, you know, a spot after having a tremendous season. And you know what? I was skeptical of Iowa's play, of kind of team they were, but seeing them come out there and seeing they had an offense and defense, it was fun to watch. So enjoyed watching the college football. Love getting a chance to talk. And of course, we don't normally get to talk a lot of college football, Brian, because, you know, it's not Amiri's favorite sport, but I definitely enjoyed the conversation. All right, a couple of notes just wanted to throw out there. Sandy Alderson, Mets GM, you know, went in for some routine surgery about, you know, a little less than a month ago, diagnosed with cancer. Well, prayers out to him, hoping that he makes a speedy recovery, Mets GM. So locally, everybody's going to, you know. Hey, I want to tell you, we had a great NASCAR guest on earlier, Brian. Robin Vandenberg on the program did a wonderful job going over some of the particulars there. I never got a chance to ask you, you know, out in the Texas area. You a big NASCAR fan?
I'm not a NASCAR fan at all. Actually, I can probably count on one hand the amount of times that when I'm flipping through the channels that I've actually stopped and watched NASCAR. Now,
really?
That does not mean that it is not extremely popular. And here in Texas, mm-hmm. it is a tradition. Now, what I would like to do, because I'm a big fan of drinking and hanging out and having a good time. So at NASCAR events, I did not know this. I have a couple of really good friends who go to some of the NASCAR events here in Texas. I didn't know that you can bring your own alcohol to NASCAR events. Like, you can bring a big cooler of whatever you want into the stadium with 110,000 people. So what I would like to do one day is I would grab one of my coolers, fill it all the way up with whatever I can fit in there, go to a NASCAR event, tailgate, drink all day, because they start boozing at like 9 o'clock in the morning at these NASCAR events. I'd like to go and do that, hang out, drink beer all day, and just watch the people. People watching must be so great at a NASCAR event with all the different types of personalities that go to NASCAR. So no, I'm not a NASCAR fan. I don't know who won the NASCAR championship or whatever they even call it, but I would be down to go drink beer and hang out at a live NASCAR event.
I and the segment of the program to you by Budweiser. That was
yeah, send
hilarious.
Us
okay.
Send us some beer, please. Send us some free booze.
I didn't know that they let you in with the cooler of anything. You know, soft drinks or otherwise. Oh.
Yeah, that's great, right? I mean, you can bring salami sandwiches and booze into the NASCAR events.
Joseph Haas here. Always a fun time when he joins us on the program. I know we did a little Jets-Giants. I want to know, what are you going to be focusing on in terms of NFL matchups? I know I got a couple I got my eyes on. When the Patriots are going to pick up the pieces against the Eagles? Are the Panthers going to remain undefeated? They go in and play the Saints, so that's going to be a toughie. But what you got your eyes on?
I actually have my eyes on Jets-Giants. First of all, me being from the New York area, upstate New York, my dad is a Giants fan. A lot of my college friends that live in New York City are Jets fans, so a lot of them making the trek over to New Jersey today for that game. I always think it's great when the Jets and Giants play in the regular season. Yeah, I know they have that preseason game every year, which doesn't mean anything. So I like when they play in the regular season because you get to mesh the two fan bases together, kind of like the Subway Series when Mets and Yankees play, or when the Knicks play in Brooklyn now to take on the Nets. I think that's pretty cool. Or when you have, you know, Devils, Islanders, stuff like that. But it happens less with Jets, Giants. So I'm watching that matchup. Who knows what we're going to see from either one of these teams, because they've been so wishy-washy all year long. So I've got that game that I'm looking forward to. I'm also looking forward, like you said, to how the Patriots bounce back. And I think I have an idea of how they're going to bounce back. I think they're going to wipe the floor with the Eagles today. They're going to be at home. They're in the 4 o'clock Eastern window. We don't know what we're going to see from the Eagles week in and week out. They have seemed like a dumpster fire as of late. And then, oddly enough, I'm interested in tomorrow night, Cowboys and Redskins, because that's an NFC East matchup. We don't know what's going to happen in this game. That division, who knows what's going to happen with all those teams there. So I'm interested to see what teams we're going to see tomorrow night, how they come out and play in that game. Are we going to see lots of turnovers? Are we going to actually see a good, solid football game? Those are some of the games that I'm looking forward to today and tomorrow in the NFL.
I know. I'm looking forward to every game. If I could, like, staple up that, that would be my mission. That would be what I'll do. Forget, you know, having chandeliers or, you know, bearskin rugs. I would have the entire studio decked out with tablets. And on each tablet, I'd have one of the games going. And that would be it. I'd point the, whenever I wanted to hear one of the games, I'd point the remote to the tablet. Boom. I'd hear that game. Keep going. Or maybe I'd have the sound to a couple of games. But that would be, I would watch each and every one of the games. But getting to the NBA for a moment, do you think the Warriors go 82? No, okay, of course they can't go 82. No. But they're not doing too bad. Okay, now look, one of the teams that gave them trouble and probably should have won that game was Brooklyn. So who knows what happens when they go up against Brooklyn. So, you know, fingers crossed that the Brooklyn Nets of all teams don't trip my Warriors up. But, you know, make do this road trip undefeated. We talked about it last week. They're doing a pretty good job on this trip so far. I mean, looking at it, I mean, coming out the other side on this thing. How many games can a team win to start the season? I mean, 20 something counting, man.
And they're 21-0 right now, and Steph Curry had 9 threes yesterday, 44 points. It really looks like, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when you're playing a video game. The Warriors almost look like they're playing a video game. I mean, they're making it look easy. They're looking like maybe the number one team in college basketball playing against everybody else, where they're making it look so easy. And they're in Brooklyn today. I think that might be a pretty tough matchup, going in Brooklyn today on a Sunday after a pretty tough win in Toronto last night. The Raptors had that lead late in the fourth quarter last night. Warriors then pulled away. I might be looking at that game as a tough one today in Brooklyn. But I'm looking at this Warriors team, 21-0. They're really 12 wins away from tying the Lakers record of the all-time win streak of 33. I think they might finish this road trip unbeaten. I said last week, I think they were going to lose during this trip, but they look like they're a video game. They honestly do. They look like they're above and beyond everybody else. They're making it look easy out there. But I don't know. Watch out today. I think today might be a little bit tough in Brooklyn. So let's see how that one goes. By the way, do you think Jay-Z and Beyonce will be there today?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they don't have any ownership stake in the team anymore. They've always probably got their seats. They can actually check it out. They haven't been, according to reports, they're sleeping on separate ends of their mansion or something.
I know, that's great for me. That's great for me because Beyonce is in my top five. So,
yeah, she's she's in my top two. but she definitely makes the top. Definitely Beyonce. So.
I expand my top five every week though in that category. We should do next week. We should do a ranking. You, myself, and Amiri, if he's back next week. Is he going to be back next week?
Yes, he should be back in the co-pilot's chair.
Where is he at last night? A One Direction concert?
Wow. Okay, now, Not fair. Not you're not allowed to spear him when he's not here, man.
I like him. But anyway, what we should do next week, you, myself, and Amiri should do a top five of our celebrity females list. And compare and contrast.
Sounds wonderful. Next week on the Green and White Show, one thing we will not be doing on the show is top five of so many females. But always keeping it interesting, always making fun as well. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. Make sure you always follow me on Twitter at Jersey Hoss as well. Before we wrap things up, buddy, number one, totally appreciate you. Now, I don't know if you got to watch this up close and personal, but you know, here's one of the things that kind of last night's games that I did want to bring up kind of on one note. Okay, so Clemson. Going back to punter, what came over him? Maybe he saw something, thought he could make it or whatever. Instead of punting, decides to go for the just go for it. He was far behind the first. He obviously didn't make, and Dabbs Ween chews him out when he comes to the sideline. Then chews him out outside. Then chews him out sending a bench. And goes and finds him and chews him some more. And this happened in the first half. So after halftime or whatever. See the punter had good come over and was up. But
yeah, I bet you he's never going to do that again, though, right? After
yeah,
what happened,
and
I did see that, and that's why punters shouldn't do dumb stuff like that. All right, your job is to punt the football and do nothing else. Okay, now I'm okay with the coaches doing that because I'm from the era of. Every single one of my coaches that I had in high school that I still am actually friends with from up home, I'm really close still with my high school basketball coach. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go to one of his practices when I'm home for Christmas in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to get to talk to my old high school team. My coach in high school used to rim us every single practice, every single day, and you know what? It honestly made us better people. I have no issue with coaches yelling at players because I think it makes you tougher. I think it's all part of playing the game. I have no problem with that. In the soft world that we've become, when I say we, I don't mean me. I'm not part of the soft world, but I'm saying that as a generalization. When you look at the world we've become, everybody is so politically correct now. Everybody wants to have everybody coddled. Everybody gets a participation trophy. I'm okay with coaches reaming their players like that. I have completely no issue with that, and I know in this day and age I'm probably in the minority with that, but I'm completely okay with that.
Always okay joining us on the program, Brian. Always a pleasure on Twitter. Why, folks, catch him again next week as he pontificates more on the happenings in sports and other things in life. I don't know if we're going to do the top five list, but it's kind of funny. Brian, catch you next week, man.
Guys, thanks. Have a good day, man.
You just make it interesting. Always keeping it interesting. Thank you, everybody. And you can find me on Twitter. Just a one big shout out to everybody who always been at home. You know, Joe, Charlie, Safe, Wolfpack, and I'm all new as well. So, as I always say, God bless. Go, Jess. Turn us up. Take us home.
Diversity Music Group. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and living color. NJ fitted to leather, it's soft butter. Collar up, my dollars up. I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, ma, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact, shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter. In the first degree, I am king. Success, young, young, fresh. Toast to the day I break, I fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing what my life is due. Success, young, young, fresh. Toast to the day I break, I fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing what my life is due. heavy, so hopefully they forgive me for enjoying the hate. Is this I'm caught in the moment? Let me catch the feeling. Sky's the limit, so what the fuck is the ceiling? After my first million, I'm gunning 100+. Incorporated us, real estate and fashion. My passion, love, and hip-hop brought me a long way from the days I pitched row. The clean-up man, dear, my cleaned up.